Yeah, no, I don't think you've ever met him before. He actually was on the podcast with me for a couple years before you came along, Reggie. So this will be your first introduction. Yeah, it'll be fun. All right, are you ready? Okay, I like where the levels are bopping there, so keep them right there. I'll give you the three S's. I'll give you the countdown. You give me the music, and I'll give you one hell of a podcast. How's that for a deal? All right? Okay, you're all set? Put down in the books episode 259 or 259. All right? Star, smile, strong. Okay, here we go. Ready? You got it? 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com. Or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast, we are there. It only makes sense. We should be, right? We are your favorite podcast. And don't forget, you listening to this podcast is not your only responsibility. No, no, no. In addition to listening and being a loyal listener, you have the added responsibility of getting out there and spreading the word. So send a link, send a message, tell a friend, tell a family member, tell a neighbor that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and why the heck isn't it there? Your loyalty and devotion and that little extra effort is much appreciated and may just get you a shiny little sticky star. Also, if you're new to the podcast or you like what you're hearing, you've been even a long time one, and you haven't heard all the podcasts, go to WGNRadio.com. Go to the podcast section of the website. You'll see a prompt for this podcast. Click on it, and you will find, amazingly, all 258 previous episodes. According to my abacus, if there's 258 in the vault, seven times four, six. Yeah. Welcome to episode number 259. Today is going to be an interesting podcast because I've got a special guest. Every so often, I have guests and regular contributors. Over the past couple of years, one of our regular contributors has been Emily Arminetti, and we always go into the pop culture club with her. But before Emily, for you longtime listeners, for those of you who are listening way back when, in fact, this month, I have to go back into my daily planner for 2021. I actually need to go back for my daily planner from 2015, which I do have. I have to check to see when the first episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic ever was posted. It was certainly in May, I believe. It was recorded in mid-May, and I think it was posted sometime around May 18th. I should know that by heart, but I don't. But I will go back into my exhaustive set of files to find that out. But this month will mark, incredibly, the sixth anniversary of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And as I said in the opening, this is episode 259. And they said it wouldn't last 250 episodes. So there you go. I do have some of my early show notes with the date. So I will go on there, too, to find out when and the exact date, if I can, of when my current guest here today first appeared. It was certainly early on. For those of you who have been listening since the beginning, if you remember, the first, one of the key card members of the Pop Culture Club, one of the initial members, is back after a long hiatus. Certainly glad to have him back. So welcome to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, my own Brown and Dirt Cowboy, Mick Kaler. How you doing, Mick?
Doing great. I finally paid all my dues up, so now I'm back and in good graces with the clubhouse.
Yes. Now we should say that Mick was on. I would say you were on for at least 6-8 months, or not a year, weren't you?
Yeah, I was in the pop culture club, definitely.
Yeah, on the podcast, and then Mick, of course, had to make money and get a real job. And so it cut into the studio time. But now, thanks to the advances in technology, and thanks to first of all, I have to thank once again. A lot of people have been complaining about the COVID pandemic. Aside from the death that
and
it
the
is
illnesses,
in right. the illness, which is death is a usually is it's a biggie.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to downplay death. It's pretty important. But aside from the illness and death, I have to thank Zoom, because if not for Zoom and its technology and emerging through the pandemic, we probably would not be getting together to be able to do this, because we haven't had the time during the day and things like that because of your schedule. But now, thanks to the pandemic and thanks to Zoom, we're able to do this.
That's what technology does, and that's what time does. And just think of all the people who are realizing that they could work from home and not their offices.
Yeah, well.
Carry on all their meetings. And I have a couple of friends who are not traveling anymore because they do everything from their house.
I don't think there's going to be such thing as an office.
Right. In a lot of places, there's not going to be.
Yeah, I mean, that's I don't know. If I owned the John Hancock building right now, wow, I'd look into condos.
Yeah. Anyone who's like in the job of leasing office space or office furniture to different businesses, you guys have got to find a new job.
Yeah. Think if you invented the office cube, the cubicle.
Right.
Oops.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, over the last several years, they were even getting away from the cube kind of culture and just having these big wide open spaces.
Right. Doing the open room thing, like a bit open newsroom.
Yeah. Now they don't even have the wide open spaces anymore.
Yeah, it's like, no, just stay at home, just do it from your house.
Yeah. So I should introduce Mick for those of you who don't know him. First of all, you can see his weekly, sometimes, but certainly regular contributions to the WGN Morning News right here in Chicago, which is also, isn't that nationwide on the cable? On the cable, as they say?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if it's on WGN America anymore, but I don't know if maybe maybe the local WGN newscast isn't nationwide, but in the Chicago area, it certainly can be seen. It's the number one news show in Chicago in the morning. And Mick and one of his partners, Al Flash, contribute regular parody songs based on news items or things that have to do with the morning show. And they are played on a regular basis. And so you can certainly hear Mick's work there. And if you have been a regular listener to Chicago radio over the last couple, three decades, Mick had been the producer with some of the biggest shows in Chicago radio, including working with Larry Lujack, one of the great legends of Chicago radio of all time, as well as Murph in the Morning. And then you went countrified.
Yeah, I got countrified with US 99 for the last 10 years of my radio, and then decided that I didn't need to do radio full-time anymore and got into teaching. But again, with the parody songs we do for Channel 9 and other little things, I keep my feet in the water just
right.
a little bit.
So, yeah, so Mick and I, just as a little brief history, Mick and I met when we were in college. Mick was a couple years older than me, but we bonded over our love of radio, our love of music, and mostly and initially over our love of the Honeymooners TV show.
That was our first common denominator for sure.
Yeah, I had a radio show on a Sunday night, and Mick had already been on the station for a year or so. I don't know if he was just it was right at the beginning when I first started my show. I don't know if Mick was just, you know, like scouting out the competition, but he was listening to my show. And I played a song that was featured in a Honeymooners episode, a famous Honeymooners episode. The song was a big hit, actually, in the 40s and 50s, sung by many people, including Frank Sinatra. Frank Sinatra does a version of this song.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's not as good as the one that was played in the episode, but it's a song called The Hucklebuck, which was a dance, like all the big dance crazes of the 50s and 60s, you know, like the twist. But The Hucklebuck was a dance, and, you know, Ralph and Ed Norton and an whole episode about this song. And I had a version of this song, and I played it on my radio show, and Mick called in and I wasn't on the air with the phone call, but you know, he said, "Hi, you know, this is Mick," and I'd seen him around the station, and I seen his name, and I knew him just, you know, through sight. We didn't really, I don't even know if we ever really met up to that point.
No, I don't think we did. No.
And Mick called in and he said, and what I knew this was going to be, you know, a long time love affair was, I think I have this correct. You just said, "Hey, this is Mick." I said, "Yeah." And you go, "Is that from the Honeymooners?" Like, you didn't even mention the song.
No.
The reference, you just said, "Was that from the Honeymooners?" And I was like, okay, I've got a kindred spirit. I often joke that, twin sons of different mothers.
Right.
And I knew exactly what he was talking about. He knew exactly why I was playing that song. And from there, we had a very fun and successful little partnership at that radio station and beyond. And we have continued to be friends and colleagues through the years. And so when it was time to do a podcast, I've always enjoyed talking to Mick. We have a great chemistry. And like I said, share a love and interest and expertise, I like to think, in music and pop culture. So who better, as I said before, to be a charter member of the Pop Culture Club than Mick Kaler. And so now go ahead.
I'm considered an officer, right? We're like above the regular members. Right?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Oh no, yeah, definitely. I mean you're definitely on the administrative side.
Board, yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. You're on the board of trustees. Yeah, I mean you might be chairman of the board. I guess I'm chairman and CEO, but you may be like vice president, executive vice president.
Let's put it this way. If you keel over tomorrow like Prince Philip, I'm moving right in.
Oh, me a Veep?
I'm taking over.
Me a Veep?
Yeah, exactly.
So, so I thought for Mick's ceremonious return here to the podcast, as I said, for the first at least year or so, certainly the first several months, Mick was a regular contributor, and we talk about different topics that were going on. And so I was looking around and I said, boy, if I have to bring Mick back, and which I've wanted to do for a while, no better way than to bring in both a pop culture as well as a music topic. And so I think this one, and it's actually now become relevant even more than it was initially, I think. So I'd like to just get to it. A few months ago, I think it was back in April of 2021, which is scary to think that's already 6 months ago, I think. How fast
is it? August. It was like August.
Yeah.
Rolling
Stone. Yes, folks. Rolling Stone is still around, by the way. Put out an updated list of their not too conceited list of the 500 greatest albums of all time. So this is it's kind of a modest list.
Right, and it's according to them. This isn't about sales. This is all based on critique and interpretation of what is great and what's not great.
Yeah, nobody went up to a mountain and a bunch of fireballs, wrote out the list on a bunch of tablets.
Yeah, it wasn't chiseled in stone.
Yeah, like the Ten Commandments. I am the Lord thy God. And so, but they put out a list of their 500 greatest albums of all time. And now they have done this list two times in the last, 20 years. One time in 2003, and then one time in an updated version in 2012. So it's been a while. And I was struck to see how much the list changed. In terms of not only the top 10, but the entire list in general, I guess I was a little surprised, but then not surprised.
Okay. Before you go further, one thing I wanted to ask, because I remember the original list like in 2003, but was there between 2003 and 2012, was there much change or did they just add a few albums?
Yeah. I mean, there was some change, but the top album did not change.
Okay. So it was like some stayed consistent, but they might've, you know, obviously between 2003, 2012, there's some, you know, decent records that come out where they say, hey,
right,
you should be in that list.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, there were new additions,
okay,
but this was radically different. This new list was radically different. And I guess and to some extent, I can see why, because over the last 10 or 15 years, the music business has really changed. And certainly rock and roll, which was the dominant music since the 50s, and I've been saying this for more than 15 years at least. Sadly, we never thought it would happen, but rock and roll is a niche music right now.
Right, it's not mainstream by any stretch of the imagination.
And there's a good chance that within the next 10 years, I mean, rock and roll, as hard as it may be for some of us to fathom, may be in the same category as big band and jazz and blues, which certainly has a history. And certainly has a very loyal following. Certainly has a major cultural impact in especially in the United States. But in terms of being what was once the music of the day and dominating both on the radio and and on record sales and things like that, there's at this point rock and roll's not even close to that anymore.
No way.
I mean, if you watch the Grammys.
Right.
I mean, is there even a song with a guitar in it?
Hard to say. A lot of it's the beatbox.
Yeah, I was just going to say, is there even a song with an instrument?
Right, exactly. It's all on the computer. No, and again, you're right. It's changed. There's been a shift. I call it an erosion because, first of all, a lot of rock acts, they're either, the artists are either dead or not as, played as they were. And they're certainly not putting out new product like, that is embraced the way it was, say, 20 years ago. And again, like you said, the other forms of music, the pop, the hip hop and the rap has certainly just overtaken the popular culture.
And the other side of the coin is, you have to, if you really want to be, are going to be honest about it, there's a whole, I think there's probably almost two generations. There's at least one full generation that has grown up with nothing but rap and pop music. And by pop, I mean your Britney Spears type of pop music. I'm not talking about like your 70s kind of pop. I mean like the big overproduced, NSYNC, boy bands, Christina Aguilera, Taylor Swift, that type of pop. Mm-hmm. But because if you think about it, most of us, I was younger, I don't know how old were you, do you think, when you would consider yourself a music fan, when you listened to it regularly, when you bought records and when you started to really get into it in terms of, accumulating knowledge and things like that?
I was probably about 10 because my sister was 4 years older than me. So I was picking up what she played in her bedroom on her stereo. And then I'd ask, well, what's that? Or who's that? And I'd hear it from there. Then I started getting into my own taste as well as what she was influencing me with, too.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I was like 9. Now, I was an only child, so I didn't have that advantage. I had to sort of learn everything on my own. My parents were older as well, so they weren't even raised on rock. They were raised on the big band.
And stuff
so
like that.
So I didn't have anybody like you to either hand me down some albums or share, hear the music coming out of their bedroom or anything. Mm-hmm. So if you think say we were young for our age, but the average person usually starts to get into music in their teens, and maybe now it might be younger just because of the convenience. It's on your computer, on your phone.
Sure.
So there's
like
more
12, 13, 14.
Yeah. So
you start to say, I like this artist, I like that artist.
Yeah. So even if you were born in the late 80s or early 90s, by the time you were 10 or 11, that's the 2000s.
Right.
And so by then, there's Eminem and there's all the, I mean, they're all there. The rap thing and the hip hop thing is in full bloom. So there's certainly one generation that has grown up with it. And now there's another generation now that's the only music they've ever heard on the radio.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what stays with them because they don't have that historical reference to say, like when we were growing up, of course, we knew who Elvis was. And even people maybe 10 years younger than us did. Now, if you said Elvis, kids today would just be like, Elvis what?
You know what's so – well, that's an interesting topic too. And before we get to the list, I think that's an interesting thing to talk about too, because you are exactly correct. If you asked anybody today about Elvis – now, people will know the Beatles just because the Beatles have done a great job of marketing.
Right, kept themselves vital.
Yeah, but Elvis, sadly, he passed away in 1977. The irony is that his fans and his stardom has become, or at least was, so over the top that the irony is that his fans have actually made him a joke.
Right.
You know, with all the Elvis impersonators.
Yep.
Elvis's music has really lost a lot of its respect, or it does. It's not even, he's not known as, for his music, he's known as the guy with the white jumpsuit.
Right, and the nutty fans and the people that, you know,
yeah.
Pilgrims to Graceland and all that.
And it's a shame because, I mean, Elvis, I mean, you know, the king of rock and roll, I mean, I don't even know, I mean, that almost sounds kind of trite these days.
Sure.
Because I don't know if the average, even 20-year-old, has a real appreciation of Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. When you were younger, when I was younger, I knew who Frank Sinatra was.
Same here, yeah.
I knew, you know, that music. And I wasn't a fan of necessarily, you know, Tommy Dorsey and Harry James and Glenn Miller, the right. big band era. But I certainly knew who Frank Sinatra was. I knew who Dean Martin was. And I knew who Elvis Presley was. And I knew who, you know, Little Richard was or Buddy Holly. I knew those people from the 50s and 60s. They may not have been my favorites, but I certainly was aware of some of their bigger hits and knew who they were. But once again, I think if you asked younger people today, even though they have unprecedented access to, we didn't have access to, think about it, we didn't have access to the music that they do today.
Right, the archives and the videos.
In 2 seconds. You can go on.
Anything, yeah.
You go on YouTube and you just type in Elvis Presley, you could be there for 20 days. We couldn't do that.
Right.
And yet, even with that access, they don't seem to either care or they don't seem, they haven't been, you know, schooled on it. And it's amazing how really their whole sense of history is less than 20 years.
Exactly. Well, the other part of it too, Jim, and I teach high school kids, even if they're talking about one of their hip hop songs they like, and someone refers to it, if it's more than 2 years old, I'm not kidding. They're like, oh man, that is so old.
No.
I'm like, seriously, they're like that.
Two years old?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Somebody the other day was bringing up some song or some artist. We were talking about something and someone just said, dude, that's way too old. I'm like, when did that come out? Oh, like 2 years ago. I'm like, oh yeah. That's got cobwebs on it. It's ancient.
Well, I'll tell you, there is no
historical reference. It's now what is happening right now or 5 minutes from now, and that's the focus. So that's why you don't have, you know, we were talking about the rock thing, and I was sitting there thinking to myself, okay, what is a rock group that's been out in the last 20 years that people could maybe relate to? You know, I thought, well, maybe the Black Keys, maybe somebody like.
But that's that. Kind of, but that's not even. I mean, that's still a mix, that's a hybrid of hip hop or rap.
Right, and it's funny too because I look at Pearl Jam. I think of Pearl Jam. Pearl Jam's first record came out in 1992.
Yeah, that was 30 years ago. I mean,
you know, or I think of Green Day. Same thing.
Right,
like these guys are ready to be grandfathers.
Yeah,
and again, like I said, even if you put new music out, that historical reference is lost to a lot of people who just don't get into that, and therein lies the problem of, like you said, someone not knowing who Elvis was, you know, or, you know, God forbid, an Elton John, you know, or an Eagles. It's like, well, what's that?
Well, you know, what's so funny? I was reading something, and I never really thought of it, but this article really struck home because as now we start to look at many of the legends of rock from dating back to the 60s and 70s. Some of them are still alive. Some of them are not. But as we look at them, so you know, Bob Dylan, in fact, this month turns 80.
Yeah.
I think McCartney will turn 80 this year. Mm-hmm. We were making a big deal about it several years ago when his age matched when I'm 64.
Right. Remember that?
Yeah. Well, that was 16 years ago.
Exactly.
You know, Jagger is 76 and Elton is 74, Springsteen is 71, 72. So we have a lot of these baby boomer, you know, 60s and 70s rock stars who are still around. But I have to think that in the next 10 years are going to be a very interesting time because we are going to lose, and this is no great, you know, prediction, but we are going to lose inevitably some of the biggest rock stars in history.
Yeah, at least one of the two surviving Beatles is going to be gone. A Rolling Stone will die.
Yeah, you know? I mean, it's not being mean. It's just that they are at that age where if they can, you know, another 10 years is not a guarantee when you're 75 or 80.
Right.
And I really wonder when those big kind of Mount Rush. I mean, Roger Daltrey, I didn't even know, is like 77, almost 78. When those big kind of Mount Rushmore names do die, I just wonder then, right now, rock and roll may not be dead. It's not dead, but it's certainly in the ICU.
It's on life support.
And it's on life support.
Yeah. It's on the ventilator.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, and that's not an exaggeration. I mean, but I think the only reason that even rock can remain somewhat in the mainstream, in the zeitgeist, in the conversation is because there are still these legendary people like McCartney and Ringo, and as I said, Mick Jagger and Bruce Springsteen and Elton John and Billy Joel and people like this and Neil Young, who are still around and they still tour.
Right. Still playing.
But when they die, or when they retire from the road, then I wonder if rock and roll, really, then the casket is closed.
Well, and part of the problem with that is it's not just that those artists leave. Think of the influence they have or they've had, you know, on other, you know, younger acts, artists, et cetera. If you don't have those guys around playing, then no kid can say, well, I was 10 years old and I saw Bruce Springsteen and now I wanted to get a guitar.
Right.
You know, and that chain of influence, and the chain of influence is already fading, but it's going to get worse because, I saw Springsteen, I wanted a guitar. Bruce dies or goes off the road or whatever. Then it's like, okay, who's going to influence you to want to get that Fender Telecaster and learn how to play chords and maybe start a band? And that's, again, like you said, it's like this dwindling chain that's just kind of eroding away as time goes on. And it's sad, kind of.
Yeah, well, but then add this to the mix. So now we're in the mode of legacies, right? Yeah. Everybody now is worried about their legacy. You know, who in the next 50 years will still be mentioned? You know, based on their body of work, given the dwindling influence and exposure of much of this music to a younger generation, how many of the names that we take for granted as legends,
right?
How many of them really will transcend into the next 50 years or into the next century? And I read this article and this one author said, well, basically, when you talk about in history, when you're talking about 100 years from now, probably, he said, probably it'll be the Beatles and Bob Dylan.
And that's it.
And so, of course, everybody just, was piling on. How could you say that? What about the Rolling Stones? And what about the Who? And what about all these other guys? And he said, well, wait a minute. Okay, tell me, when you think about the big band era, do you come up with 75 bands?
No, you don't. You come up with a couple of staples.
Yeah, you say Glenn Miller, and like I said earlier, Glenn Miller, Tommy Dorsey, Tommy James, maybe.
Yeah.
You don't say Basil Fomin or Teddy Fioretto. Little Jack Little. The people of the era will say, geez, what about, AC/DC was great. Right. And things like that. And some of these other, the Who was great, or the Kinks were great. But really, when you start to look, perfect example. Okay, talk to me. Okay, I say to you, Mick, tell me some of the great jazz artists.
Charlie Parker.
Yeah. All right.
And I'm kind of stuck.
That's what I'm saying.
Exactly. I think of someone they made a movie about and all that. So again, like you just said, you lose that. Everybody else kind of falls off the cliff.
Yeah. So think about it. If we're over here wondering right now, can rock survive?
Right. Wait till these guys die.
Yeah. It's going to really be historically. There's no doubt that the Beatles have to be there. You know, but this guy's even talking that maybe Elvis won't even be there.
It's very possible. And again, because of, again, the age thing and the fan thing and all that, and you're just going to look at a couple of examples. And getting back to that for a second, Jim, have you seen the BG special, the
yes. Peter Gibb thing? Yes, okay. Very good.
So I found it interesting when they interviewed Justin Timberlake was so into them and talking about them, and so was the guy from Oasis. And I'm like, okay, it's great that Justin Timberlake says the Bee Gees are awesome, but it's like, now Justin Timberlake is older too.
Right.
So it's like, what influence does he really have where some kid says, hey, Justin Timberlake says that Barry Gibb is awesome. I better listen to them. That again gets lost in this historical reference issue.
Yeah. I mean, to your point, I think, what is it? 2021. I believe sometime in the next 2 or 3 years, like, Justin Timberlake and Britney Spears, in theory, even though they don't belong, will be up for induction in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right, and they'll get in because of their popularity.
Well, but once again, I think I've said many times that that if the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is going to continue into the next, you know, decades, they have to change their name.
Yeah, and there have been some artists that have said this, that it should be the Music Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's got to be the top. It's got to be either the Music Hall of Fame or the Pop Music Hall of Fame, or at the right. very least, if you want to keep Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, that's fine, but you need an umbrella. Mm-hmm. That needs to be the umbrella thing, and then you have to have, like, you have to have different, smaller subsets.
Right, little subsections of care.
Like, oh, here's the pop, and here's the hip-hop. If
right,
you want to keep the
metal.
Yeah, because, you know, they're trying to, like, dotted line, like, oh yeah, well, you know, Janet Jackson belongs because, well, no, she doesn't,
right?
You know,
Madonna doesn't. Yeah,
yeah. But they're in anyway, even though Jethro Tull isn't, so
yeah.
Figure that out. But so anyway, so rock and roll finds itself in a very precarious position for the first time in its history. It has been the dominant youth oriented music dating back to the mid-50s and Elvis Presley. And even though it's changed its sound and its face over the last 60, 70 years, it still had been the main music. But as hard as it is, as I said before, for people who have grown up and lived with it, and it has lasted much longer than anyone expected, because sure. You listen back at the time, back in the 50s and 60s, you know, Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin were making jokes about this, like this some goofy fad.
Yeah, it'll go away tomorrow. It's yeah. really crazy. Exactly.
So it certainly has outlasted its critics. But as we talked before, over the last 20 years, easily, rap and hip-hop and pop have dominated the charts, dominated the records, and dominated the pop culture. And so it's not surprising then that Rolling Stone magazine, when it now updates its list, because once again, you know, don't forget, even 8 years, the last 8 years from 2012 till now, you know, nine years, music has drastically changed in terms of how it is delivered, how it is listened to. And that's a key as to who is listened to.
I was just going to say, and that's the other part, is who is listening to it and who is paying credence to the new acts. And again, they're obviously younger people who are putting more, I guess you'd say, emphasis on some of the records that they're including on this list that they didn't before, because the music wasn't out before, you know. And then it's like, oh, I like this now. This is good.
Well, think about it. When we went out and bought a record, and when we, you know, back, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, there, not that it was Herculean, but there was actually like a physical effort.
Oh yeah,
I mean, you had to get up. You had to leave your house.
You had to go to a store. You had to go filing through the records alphabetically, and you had to look for your. You know, it was funny. I was just thinking the other day about Rolling Stone Records going there, and I remember the first time I ever walked in there, I almost got depressed because I realized that I'm never going to own all the music I want to own.
I was scared to walk in there. This was a record store that's still around on the northwest side of Chicago, and it literally, I mean, it is literally wall to floor,
yeah,
filled with records.
There's not an open space.
No, there's not an open space. There's bins in the middle. I mean, and I remember, like I said before, in the 70s, walking in there, you'd walk into this place. It had windows, but it had no light because even the music racks covered the windows.
Yeah, and again, like you said, there was the physical act. I got to find this album. Okay, this is the one I think I want. I'm going to flip it over. I'm going to look at the other songs. Then I'm going to see if there's something else I want to buy. And again, look at, like you said, about the music delivery. Nowadays, what do? You go to YouTube. You want to download a song off of online and do that, and or get off of Spotify or whatever. That's what you do. So that whole physical act, at, or the best part was, and you probably did this many times too, Jim, going to a record store with your friends.
Oh, that was the best. We went to Rolling, as you mentioned, to Rolling Stone, because it was literally 15 minutes from where we lived. Whether it was on our bikes when we were younger, or then when we was able to drive when we were 16, 17 years old. But we would literally go to Rolling Stone at least 3 to 4 times a week.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of a thing where if we were out, especially in the summer, you'd be like, okay, well, we just went to McDonald's, and what do you want to do now? I don't know. I want to go to Rolling Stone?
Yeah.
And we'd kill an hour.
And you never know what you're going to find. And to put it in perspective for people today, it'd be the similar, like if you watch The Big Bang Theory when they go to the comic book store.
Right, exactly, yeah.
And they're looking for new things or things they haven't owned or whatever. That's what it was like in the record store.
And
again, but it's changed.
But my point is that at least there was an effort. You said, I not only do I like this song, mm-hmm. but I like it so much that I'm going to actually get off the couch. I'm going to get on a bus. I'm going to get on a bike. I'm going to get in a car. And I'm going to drive and go to or walk. Or some way, or nag my parents to drive me there, but I'm going to get physically there and go. Whereas now, I mean, I just click on my phone.
Yep.
I hit 3 buttons and I bought a song.
And I own it.
And I own it, and I bought it, and I listened to it. And so, sadly, you know, the irony is that technology has made music more accessible, which is great. But at the same time, I think it's also made it disposable,
right?
Because it doesn't have that same mystique of owning it and buying it and the effort it took. I mean, once again, since it doesn't exist, you know, nowadays in any kind of tangible form, it almost feels like I forgot that I downloaded that song at 2 a.m.
Right.
But if you brought a record home, if you brought a 45 or an album, it's sitting there. You know you bought it.
You've got to sit. And the other part of that I wanted to bring up was the communal effort of listening to a song. Like you said, you click your phone, you click your mouse on your computer and download your song. You can do it by yourself. That's fine. What did you do when you bought a new record? You called your friends up. Hey, I got the new Eagles record. I got the new Rolling Stones record. I got the new Elton John record. Why don't we come over and listen to it? And 3 or 4 guys, you know, people come over, you sit in your beanbag chairs and you listen to music, okay? And it's and that kind of communal, you know, let's all check this out together. I remember when Who Are You came out, I was a senior in high school, and we were all excited. And I got the album, I had friends over, and we put on the stereo and listened to it. And it's funny because I've told my students about how we used to listen to records that way, and we'd all get into the songs, oh, I like this one, oh, I don't like that one, whatever. And it's funny, though, Jim, a lot of the students have said, that sounds like a really cool thing to do.
Isn't that wild?
And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
But they don't know that effort. Because like you said, you download it and you can forget about it. It's like, I didn't know I had this on my phone. I forgot about this.
Well, yeah. I mean, today, sadly, overall, we are a less communal society in general. Not even sure, just for listening records.
Yeah.
You know, we are not, because of technology, we have movies in our home. We don't have to go to the theater. Even before the pandemic, we've got music on our phones. I don't need to go to your house because you bought the record and I don't have it yet. Mm-hmm. I if you say, oh, you know what? I just downloaded the new whatever album. I say, okay, boop boop boop. Okay, so did I.
Yeah.
Bye.
I matched you.
Bye.
Yeah.
And then I hang up and listen to it. So you know, they're, like I said, the experience is different, and the delivery system is different, and I think the attachment is different to the music. But as I said, with this list, I'm not surprised now when you look at the way everything has shifted and how we listen, what we listen to, and what music has become. I'm not surprised that the Rolling Stone list, this time of 500 greatest albums of all time, the placement of the songs has almost flipped. The bottom has become the top, and the top has become the bottom, and many of the long-standing names and the legendary names that we would, that especially an album or a magazine like Rolling Stone would have in their list because it was rock and roll dominated, even in are gone, and even in the introduction to the story, in the magazine, the editor says, okay, this list is no longer what he would call rock centric. Mm-hmm. He said it is the list is no longer rock centric. It now is diverse, and it is it's a reflective of the times and of the listeners, and we said before as to how people listen to music and even about with rock and roll. I mean, the thing about Rolling Stone, as I joked, it's still around. The funny thing is, I'm sure if you talk to the editors of Rolling Stone today, and you said, geez, Rolling Stone used to be the rock and roll magazine.
Yeah, it was the place to go for knowing about that.
And now it isn't at all. Mm-hmm. But what I think they would argue is that Rolling Stone was always a pop culture magazine that reflected the youth of the time. Now, it just so happens in 1967, sure, when it was first created by Jan Wenner in San Francisco, that the counterculture, the young culture's music, was rock and roll.
And that was the popular thing that they could reflect on.
And bond with.
Right. Well, and to pull that point a little further, I remember when Duran Duran was put on the cover of Rolling Stone and called the Fab Five.
Right.
And what a big deal that was. How dare you do that? Disperse the Beatles and all that. And it's like, yeah, guess what? Guess who was selling out arenas at that time? Duran Duran.
Yeah.
So they were reflecting, like you said, the popular, voice at the time, not just on the radio, but the fans were into. And that's what they realized. Well, this is no longer Elton John or Bruce Springsteen. This is the group of the moment. So we need to reflect that. And they did the same with Britney Spears, right, and Shania Twain and others too.
Yeah. So you shouldn't be surprised if you see Drake or Dua Lipa or Oompa Loompa, whatever the heck her name is.
Oz or whatever.
These
names of these exes and other things. And I know we sound old when we say that, but it's true. It's like I look at some of these things.
Even Beyonce.
Yeah. Is that a name or is that a band? Or is that like the chemical formula for something? Yeah. I don't know. But again, they're going to reflect that. So why don't you have that list? What are some examples you got?
Let me just say, the editor says that the 2020 list no longer is rock centric, but rather is now, and this is the phrase,
right,
a coalition of tastes.
Ah,
a coalition of tastes.
Sounds like a stew.
Yeah, and so apparently this list was compiled with from like 300 ballots of musicians and producers and journalists and music executives. So this is really not even fan based. This is more of a critical kind of insider
type thing. Yeah, yeah. Right.
And so here's the thing: out of the 150 or the 500 greatest albums of all time, on this new list that came out in 2020, at the end of 2020, there were 154 new additions.
Okay.
Okay, so that's not half, but that's a pretty good number. That's more than a fifth.
Right, exactly.
Some
substantial amount as far as additions go.
86 albums from the 21st century out of the 500 of all time. And here's the key: three times as many rap albums than were on the original list in 2003.
Okay.
So three times as many rap. So you say, okay, how has the list changed since 2003? Because that will go back to the first list.
Right.
18 years ago, the number one album was, what do you think? Of all time, the greatest album of all time.
Dylan, Blonde on Blonde?
No, that's interesting. But no, it was, of course, Sgt. Pepper.
Okay, Sgt. Pepper.
Yeah,
right.
The Beatles, Sgt. Pepper.
Okay.
Where do you think Sgt. Pepper now shows up on this list?
That's 17, 18, something like that?
24. 24.
Why have they fallen?
I mean, come on. I mean, I don't know. Has a day in the life, has that song got any worse? Did they take out a verse I didn't know about?
Yeah.
I mean, what a drop. I mean, you say, well, Jesus, 18 years. Yeah, but I mean, Sgt. Pepper has always, since it came out in 1967. I mean, think about it. It came out in 1967, and in 2003, it was still considered the number one album of all time.
In rock and pop music, and a vital statement, and it's dropped now to 20.
Yeah, so that was 30-some years. It remained and then in 18, it went down to 24. I mean, in fact, the Beatles don't even show up until number 5 in Abbey Road.
Okay.
So, I mean, we talked about, okay, what are the 20th century rock era, right? Mm-hmm. In the year 2150, what are they going to be talking about? And the Beatles don't even show, they go from number, their one album, the best album, what was supposedly, drops down to 24, and then Abbey Road, which wasn't even in the top 10, now is at 5. That's the highest. I mean, they're not. It wasn't like, well, we don't like Sgt. Pepper anymore, but we like Abbey Road better.
Yeah, that's our choice.
They dropped to number 5. You mentioned Bob Dylan. Now, I mean, Blonde on Blonde would, I would think most people, when you look at his albums, you are exactly correct. Mm-hmm. That's probably his best album. It was a double album. But that's not. No, Bob Dylan barely make, he comes in at number 9. So he's barely in the top 10. And now suddenly his album Blood on the Tracks is the one that everybody's talking about.
Okay.
So that what comes in at number 9. So you got the Beatles at number 5 and Bob Dylan at number 9. Mm. And those are the names that we're saying may be the only names
remembered
in the next 100 years. So if those names are the ones that we would expect, and they're barely in the top 10,
yeah, struggling to stay there.
Then where is everyone else going to be? Now here's the big. This is the one that really shows you the difference. So there's the album is The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
Okay, and I remember that was a critically acclaimed record.
Right,
I do remember that.
Okay, in 2003, out of the 500 greatest albums of all time, according to Rolling Stone, that album placed at number 312.
Okay.
What number do you think it was in 2020?
Well, it's got to be in top 10, so like third or fourth?
No, number 10.
Number 10.
From 312 to 10.
Now, do they justify or explain the reason for that major shift?
Well, here's in a nutshell here, or at least in an overview, what I think's going on here is that Rolling Stone and its editors, as well as all these people that had input into this, music insiders, journalists, they want the magazine and they want themselves, which is even more important, to be relevant.
Okay.
And I think they want to be viewed as relevant in the terms of recognizing different musical genres, recognizing different genders, and recognizing different races.
So they're opening themselves up more, and because of that, some of the quote classics are going to go by the wayside as far as a list.
Well, think about the major. Think of every band we just mentioned, as far as these classic rock bands, right?
Yeah.
Okay. How many black artists did we mention?
None. Well, Bruce said Clarence Clemens.
Yeah, right. Okay.
He wasn't an artist.
That doesn't count. Nice try.
You're right.
I give you an A for effort, but that you're coming in the back door there.
No.
Okay.
No.
How many were African American?
None.
Zero. How many were female?
None.
And how many?
Misogynist, terribly white.
And how many were not rock based?
Yeah, exactly.
So now, as I said, Rolling Stone on a regular basis. And the only reason, to be honest with you, the only reason I even receive Rolling Stone anymore is because several years ago I got an offer of a lifetime subscription that was ridiculously low for me to turn down, because I probably would not get this magazine anymore, because I don't know three quarters of anybody that they're talking about.
Yeah, I can't even remember. It's been at least 4 or 5 years since I've even picked up a copy at the newsstand.
So I think that they are rightly as a I would consider themselves, if you ask them, as a pop culture magazine that is now reporting on the music of the day, as much as we may lament the fact that rock and roll is no longer the dominant thing, they have to face that reality.
Yeah, and they're reflecting it. And the other part I was going to say, Jim, is there, you know, there's been a shift, okay, and they're recognizing other artists and things. And that's, it's like people say, well, they're rewriting history. They're not rewriting history. They're just reinterpreting what is vital, okay? When I looked at that list, and I know you're going to get to a couple more of them too, I'm like, I think because, like you said, reflective of the times, they have to keep a more open mind to say, what is vital now, which may change in 10 years too.
Well, but here, you know, and I agree with you, but I would also argue that we can, you know, we can change the future, right? In terms of the, to your point, as how we evaluate it,
right,
and respect it. We can change that in the future. Like you're saying, geez, you know, okay, we got to look at every name, you know, every group we listed, you know, okay. Mm-hmm. But I don't see why we have to diminish the past, mm-hmm, while we elevate the future. Mm-hmm. See, I think what's going on now is that we're elevating the future, but we are completely disregarding and disrespecting and diminishing the past. And I don't see why that has to be done.
Yeah.
And so, like, for instance, in this list, like, I mean, here. So we talk about some of the legendary names. Rolling Stones, the highest they come in is, with their first time on this list, is at number 14.
And which one was that? Exile on Main Street?
Yeah. Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run, First appearance on the list, 21.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't have the specific albums here, but so Bowie's first entry is at number 40.
Okay.
And David Bowie these days, since he passed away, has been elevated to God status.
Yeah, exactly. It was a good career move.
Pink Floyd. Is, you know. Yeah, Pink Floyd, right? Mm-hmm. Pink Floyd. The Wall.
Dark Side of the Moon.
Side of the Moon.
Animals.
Animals. Yeah. I mean, Dark Side of the Moon was literally on the charts for like 10 years.
Yeah, decades, yeah.
Number 55, first time.
Wow.
Led Zeppelin. Led Zeppelin, 58. Mm. The Who, 77.
That's their first entry?
77.
I think it's
Who's Next, yeah.
Okay.
Now here, and then forget about classic. Look at this. U2, right?
More contemporary, vital band, still touring and playing football stadiums.
135.
Wow.
Now, here's the best part. This is my point about diminishing the past, mm-hmm, while trying to elevate the future.
Right.
Kanye West, and I don't own one of his albums. I can't even tell you one of his songs, to be honest with you. Yeah, and I'm not bragging, or I'm not being ashamed or anything. That's just the fact.
Yeah.
Apparently, he's got an album called My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy.
Okay.
Did you ever hear of that?
No.
No. That's number 17.
No kidding.
You know what number 118 is?
What?
Hotel California.
Eagles. That's their first entry in there?
I don't think it's the first. I think it might be, but I mean, Hotel California is
a staple album.
I mean, of the 70s.
Yeah, and going back again, when you talk about albums that you own, where it's like, well, you have to own this because it's a Mount Rushmore album, Hotel California is certainly on there. And just like the other ones you mentioned are too, sure.
So my point is, Why suddenly is Hotel California number 118?
Yeah.
And Kanye West is 17. I don't know Kanye West's music. I'm not a fan of rap music. I've said that many times. I'm not diminishing Kanye West. Mm-hmm. Perhaps this music and this album was groundbreaking within the world of rap and pop. That's possible. That may be the case. I certainly hope it is if it's that high in the ranking.
Sure.
But at the same time, does an album like Hotel California, which is seminal, which is defining of an era, why does that have to fall to somewhere? I mean, I would have thought that was number 10.
Right.
And yet it's number 118. Now, here's what I think is the key to this whole conversation. In terms of wanting to reflect today's world, wanting to reflect today's perspective on things, wanting
culture
to
America.
Culture and society, and I understand that, and music has always been a part of that, especially since the rock and roll era. It became socially conscious as well as popular. The album that is number one that replaced the Beatles. Okay. I have no problems in saying this is a great album.
Okay.
I can't believe it's the greatest album of all time. Mm-hmm. But when you consider the other influences, it makes perfect sense. Now, I gave you the list.
And I know which album is. I'll let you say it in a second. Again, think of the paradigm switch. The culture and the way things are looked at today. So that number one album is
Marvin Gaye's "What's Going On,"
which is now. Here's my quick question: where was that in 03? I'm curious.
You know what? Let me see if I had that.
I don't know if you have a list or not. I'm sure it was on the top 500
it was certainly on the top 500, but it was not number one.
That was a major release.
And once again, it is one of the great albums of all time.
Sure,
there's no question about that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if, but and if you think about it, so right away, I mean, I say, wow, what a shocker, because mm-hmm. I'm sure it wasn't in the top 10. You know, in the previous things, but it makes perfect sense if you look at the current climate of the country.
Yep.
And don't forget Rolling Stone's motives for putting this list together, which is to appeal to a younger generation.
Yep.
To get new subscribers and to be as relevant to this new generation in terms of kind of this touchstone of what's cool and what isn't, which Rolling Stone used to be, to in today's world. So, in a post George Floyd world, which we are in now, especially right after this verdict, you know, with Black Lives Matters and protesters going out into the streets and wanting change. And well, what's going on is a rallying cry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'll give you a side thing in a second, but it's a way of saying, hey, here's something from the past that can be moved to right now and related to, like you said, what's happening in the world. What do you see on TV every day as far as the protests or, like you said, the trial and all the things that are happening in American culture that is, you know, even though some of that was going on at the time when that album first came out, when Marvin Gaye's album first came out, it's more dominant and prevalent today.
Yeah, I mean, that album came out literally 50 years ago this year.
Yeah.
50 years ago, and sadly, as a kind of indictment on our society, mm-hmm. this album released 50 years ago in 1971 talked about racism, inequality, police brutality, racial injustice, urban violence, guns, drug addiction, the environment.
And here's the problem. 50 years later, we haven't made too much progress.
No.
And that's what I was thinking about when I saw the list.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, boy, we're actually kind of going backwards here, aren't we?
I mean, that's why in terms of relevancy, despite it being 50 years old, it is speaking directly to today's problems as well as the issues that are dominating our society. And so I'm not denigrating the album. It is a great album. And that song, What's Going On, itself is a classic. There's no question. Yep. But at the same time, if you're coming out now with a list of the greatest albums of all time, and your goal is to appeal to today's generation, then there may be no better album to fit in and be as relevant as this album. Even though it might not be the greatest album of all time, it certainly checks a lot of the boxes if you want to have those other outside influences also get into the mix of how you rate the album.
Well, I was going to say, first of all, it's not the greatest album of all time, but at this time, like you said, in this time in our social climate, it is so relevant. And here's the best part. I don't know if you saw the commercial for it. This Sunday, CNN is doing a special on that album.
No.
They've interviewed a bunch of people.
I didn't even know that. How perfect is this?
I saw it the other day, and they said they're going to talk about Marvin Gaye's What's Going On, and they interviewed some artists. And one, I forget which artist, said, wow, really a profound statement all those years ago, and see where it is today. It's on CNN this coming weekend. I think it might be 7 or 8 o'clock at night. And obviously they'll repeat it a couple of times.
So yeah, we'll have to look for that.
And obviously, like I said, obviously something like the Rolling Stone list probably woke them up to check that out again. And again, go, wow, like you said, the ecology, racial injustice, police brutality, Black lives, etc. It's like, wow, that stuff 50 years ago is still going on now. This is why we're going to examine this. So it should be an interesting special.
Oh yeah. I mean, don't forget, there's a song, Mercy, Mercy Me, in quotes, is called The Ecology.
Ecology, yeah.
Inner City Blues, in parentheses, that song is called Make Me Wanna Holler. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it totally speaks to it. And so, I mean, here's the key too about this list. So the top 10 now, right? Once again, we were mentioning all those great rock bands, right? Bob Dylan, The Beatles, The Who,
right.
the Kinks, blah, 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 blah. Pink Floyd, yeah. Led Zeppelin, all those things. In this list now, the top 10, 4 African-American artists, Marvin Gaye, Stevie Wonder, Prince, and Lauryn Hill.
Okay.
2 women, Joni Mitchell's Blue is in the top 3, I believe.
Okay.
With Lauryn Hill. And then Fleetwood Mac, Rumors, and of course that, if you think about that album, it's kind of female dominated with Stevie Nicks and and Christy McVie handling, aside from the big hits, were pretty much the songs by the women.
Right.
I mean, Go Your Own Way was a hit, but besides that, you had Dreams and you had, You Make Love and Fun and Don't Stop. I mean, those are all female led songs.
One other thing about that, when you mentioned the song Dreams, what song got super popular last year when that guy was skateboarding?
Right.
That might have woke somebody up to say, hey, you know what? Dreams is on that Fleetwood Mac album. We should put that in that top 10.
Yeah, I mean, when I looked over the whole list, I didn't have any, even though there were some albums that, even the albums I've never heard of or heard, the artists that they were by, I assumed that they were the best albums by that person. And those people, even though they may not be my favorites, I understood why they were there.
Yeah.
So I didn't have any qualms with going through the whole list, the top 500. Except I have to say, the one I did have a problem with was, I believe, number 499 or 500, which was Ask Rufus by Chaka Khan and Rufus.
Oh, my gosh.
So I don't know if Nile Rodgers or somebody is having some undue, influence into this list, but because I don't know where that came from. But I see, I understand that why they're there. But I think if we're in this, I think would have I would have appreciated this list more, especially because the disparity in the way the numbers have just changed so much.
So much, exactly.
That I'm wondering. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just wondering. Should this list, if you're, you know, don't forget, we're in an era now too where, you know, everybody gets a trophy.
Yeah.
Right? Nobody wins anymore.
Right. Just participation. You were part of this game.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think moving forward, I know it helps for a discussion just like what we're doing here, because if it didn't have this list, we wouldn't be talking about it. So Rolling Stone knows what they're doing marketing wise.
As far as getting people to buzz. Yeah. Exactly.
But I would say I wouldn't have had such a problem if they would have said, here is a list of the 500 greatest albums of all time listed alphabetically.
Okay, yeah.
You know what I mean? Let's just get rid of the numbers.
Right. Get rid of the rankings and the classification of this is more vital
right.
than an album at 110.
Right.
And then the other part of that is then you can look up your favorite artist and go, well, I love Elton John, so I'm going to look at the E.
Right.
You know? And just look at it.
But then I say, okay, you know what? Hotel California is on there. It should be.
Yeah, right.
I shouldn't say, why is Kanye West at 17 and Hotel California is at 118?
Right.
I would just say, okay, Kanye West is on there. He probably deserves to be on there, given his popularity and his impact in the hip-hop world. I have no problems with that. Okay, Lauryn Hill's album, like you said, you remember when it came out?
Oh, I remember that was a really big deal record. I certainly remember that.
Yeah, so I think that maybe moving forward, since we are in this era of, you know, no competition, it might be best. So to once again, get to back to my earlier point of why do we have to diminish the past? Mm-hmm. When we elevate the present, why can't we celebrate the present and celebrate the past?
Right. And actually, it's a great idea to do that alphabetically, because then you're just, again, we talk about inclusion. Everybody's included and nobody's marginalized.
Well, that's perfect. That's exactly correct.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what kills me is in today's world, we are preaching tolerance. Mm-hmm. And in our effort to have a more tolerant society, we are being intolerant.
Right. We're not. You know, when you don't have Hotel California in the top 100 or the top 20, you're not including them.
But my point is, like with this whole cancel culture thing, you know, if you're saying I'm canceling you because you don't think correctly,
yeah, or the way I want you to,
then because you have to put correctly in quotes. Because what is correctly, that's subjective. But if I'm canceling you because you don't think correctly, then aren't you being intolerant to someone else's viewpoint, just as you have felt that your viewpoint had been overlooked so long in the past?
Exactly.
So you cannot preach tolerance and then be intolerant. You either have to be tolerant and have to, you know, I have no problems with evolving in thought and inclusion. No problems. But I don't think you should have inclusion by excluding.
Right, and just pushing others aside. Yeah. Diminishing them.
Now, the other thing that I'm actually kind of proud of, when I went through the list of one of the best 500 albums of all time, I was happy to say that of the 500, I have in my collection 175.
Okay, so you're better than 20%. That's good.
And I have 9 of the top 10 albums.
Okay.
And you know why? Because I don't have Lauryn Hill's album.
Well, you're going to have to go out and buy that now. I remember her being interviewed when that, and it won a bunch of awards and things. And I loved the title of it. That was a great title. And it was one of those. You know, if you want to say like what a Who's Next is or a Hotel California, you know, for that genre of music, that was a big stamp, a big time stamp when that record came out. I do remember that.
And look, I mean, I understand that if people are listening to this, especially some younger people, if by any chance they even know it exists, they're like, okay, who are these two middle-aged white guys talking about music? And, you know, and maybe we do sound like we belong in another era, but this is my point. Does the fact is that we do have knowledge of this music, We do have a history of this music. And why should our views and knowledge of this be discounted?
Right, be diminished.
Be diminished just because it's not in keeping of the music of today. Which is, again, I am not, I mean, I have nothing against any of the music today. As I said, every as Paul Simon said on his Graceland album, every generation throws a hero up the pop charts.
Yep.
I mean, that's it. I get it. And I am more than happy to pass the baton to someone else. Mm-hmm. And let if that's the music, but at the same time, I just don't think why if I say I don't watch the Grammys anymore, I'm not being indicting.
No.
Of the Grammys, I'm just saying I can't. It's not my kind of music. I don't know any of the songs. I don't know the artists. So why should I watch it?
Right. Well, the phrase I used to use is, you know, now you don't want to be called a hater.
Right.
Just like you said, you don't have a lot of identification to it. The phrase I use when people ask me about things like that is I use the phrase, it's not for me.
Right.
And I'm saying it's terrible. I'm not saying your music sucks or, you know, like you said, where are the instruments and all that? Although I do wonder where the guitars and
yeah.
the drums are.
Yeah.
But it's not for me.
Yeah.
And it's if it's for you, hey, you know, go with God and enjoy. And that's your thing. But it's not for me.
Yeah. And as I said, I am very, at this point, and I actually, and from my standpoint, it happened at a very early age, earlier than I would have expected it to happen, is that I saw the gap beginning mm-hmm. very early on. And I was probably in my mid to late 30s, mm-hmm. even in the subset of rock, where rock and roll, whatever it was at that time, was going.
Right.
And I was like, you know, this isn't really my cup of tea, just to your point. It's not my cup of tea. Now, when someone says, oh, like I said, you know, I mean, Oompa Loompa or whatever her name is, you know, or a Beyonce. I mean, I'm not, once again, saying I don't like their music, but the fact of the matter is, I like rock and roll.
Right.
So, if I like rock and roll, I'm sorry, I can't like Beyonce or Jay-Z. That it's a different music.
Yeah. Different
so preference. It's not just because it's new music mm-hmm. or it's you're stuck in the past. No, I like my preferred musical genre is rock and roll.
Yeah.
So if I wouldn't, there were times when I didn't, even in my heyday, if it wasn't rock and roll, I didn't like it. You know, we're not too old. Everybody thinks we're so old, but we're not so old that, don't forget, when rap was beginning, we were in our 20s.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, when Run DMC, you know, combined with Aerosmith or the Beastie Boys or the first, you know, the first rap.
Right.
We were in our mid-20s.
Flash, or even before that, I was just beginning of college when Blondie did Rapture.
Right.
And that was a white blonde girl doing rap.
Yeah. I mean, even Bootsy Collins and Parliament, and that stuff was all around.
Right.
But I didn't listen to it. I liked rock and roll music. So it wasn't like, oh, well, that's from a different era. No, rock and roll and rap, that was my era.
Sure.
I just didn't like it.
Yeah, and again, in fairness, like you said, there are still rock songs that you know some people didn't like. When the grunge era came out, especially with Nirvana, I was not understanding that attraction, and that was in the rock genre. That, well, you know, I like rock. I'm like, you know what, that record I don't like. I like Pearl Jam. I didn't like Nirvana.
That's what I'm talking about. That's exactly what I'm talking about. I saw I started that diversion, and so you figure in 1993 or 94, I was only 30. Mm-hmm. But I was like, you know what? I'm not getting this.
Yeah.
And the irony about grunge is that many at the time thought it was rock saving grace.
Oh yeah, that was like the thing that, you know, everybody with the flannel shirts and the whole thing.
Well, it's just that that finally there was a new rock music that was kind of capturing the moment again.
Yeah.
Because it had been a while. since rock had that prominent thing. But you think about my view on this is the irony is that grunge was supposed to be rock's savior. I argue that it actually helped kill rock and roll because grunge was so aggressive and so niche. Because you think about the roots of grunge, it's basically speed metal and punk.
Right.
And that's not a mainstream music.
Yeah, it's not the kind of thing that's going to appeal to a lot of people.
No, and you know, at the end of the day, I mean, I'm not trying to sound sexist here. At the end of the day, girls want to dance.
Yeah.
girls want to dance. And so what gave, you know, I believe, think about the dichotomy of that time. Why do you think Britney Spears and NSYNC and the boy bands and Christina Aguilera, why did they become popular? Because they were filling the void and the need for pop dancey music in the face of this aggressive, you know, grunge, which was getting a lot of popularity. But people were going, like your point, well, you know, I can't dance to this.
Yeah, and again, it was a complete opposite. It was a 180-degree difference. So they were able to, like you said, make their bones with that while the grunge thing was happening. And then rock, like you said, I think somewhat diminished some of its...
Well, out of all that pop, once that pop took over, then that's where hip-hop came in.
Right.
You know, rappers started to get into that pop sound, and then you still had your Mariah Careys then, you know, and your Whitney Houstons that were, you know, playing into the pop with your new, versions of, as I said before, Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera at that time. And so it was a reaction to that, just like disco was a reaction to Led Zeppelin.
Yep.
And the Who and all the rock of the mid 70s.
Exactly.
You know, so but I said I was starting to drift away from new music even back then. Because I'm like, okay, I love that phrase. It was not for me.
Yeah.
I have nothing against it. I'll sing a Britney Spears song. There's no question that they're catchy, you know, hook-filled songs, but I don't have a Britney Spears album.
Right.
I don't even have a Madonna album.
Yeah, so...
You know, and once again, that's I was in my mid-20s. Why shouldn't I have a Madonna album?
Exactly, big popular. I mean, 83, 84 when her records started coming out.
Yeah.
And again, everybody has their tastes. And the other thing I was noticing, too, when you talk about the newer music, too, is... In more modern day times, like now, I appreciate some of the acts that years ago I liked them, but I wasn't really into them as much. Like, say, give me an example, like a Boston or a Supertramp. I mean, I listened to their songs, I knew their songs and all that. I appreciate them more now because there isn't anything, like you said, there isn't anything new coming out that makes me worthy, that makes it worthy. Like, oh, I want to hear someone so comes out with a new album. Like I mentioned, the Black Keys or some of these other rock acts that still are around or that are putting out stuff that it's like you said, I don't really like this. So I'm going to go look backwards and find stuff to appreciate that maybe I didn't do the first time around.
And plus, I think as you get older, the need to be cool isn't there anymore.
Oh, it, like I've said this a million times. I quote the Devo song, "I'm true being cool."
Yeah.
I was true being cool 20 years ago. I didn't care.
And so much of what the music that you listen to when you're younger is that's also a contributing factor.
Yeah.
You want to be cool. And I actually, at this point, my view, and like I said, for many years, I'm happy to listen to the music. I'm like, you know what? This is the music I like. I'm not worried about what anyone says about it because I'm listening to it. It's either in my headphones.
Yep. My face.
So why do I care? And I'm not going to try to pretend to like something or try to be hip when I don't feel it. I don't care. And really, I'm not out to impress anybody. I think you're the coolest when you don't try to be cool.
Well, exactly. Yeah. it's funny you say that phrase, because I think I wrote about this last year in one of my blogs. It was the anniversary of when Tom Petty passed away. You know, a couple of years before that, and I wrote at the time. I saw him on an interview a few years before he died, when he was on CBS Sunday Morning, and I decided Tom Petty was the coolest rock star because he didn't care.
Right.
He didn't have like the cool outfits or the preening on stage. He was just doing his thing. And like you just said, that's the ultimate of cool. Like, I really don't worry about what others are thinking. I'm just going to do my thing. And that's where you're not playing to anyone except what you like to do. And for me, forgive me, but that's what I consider cool. So,
yeah. And especially in today's world, as we said earlier in the conversation, we are a much less communal society anyway.
Yeah.
And so we're all about individualism. So once again, by me being into my music, and whether it's 50 years old or whether it's whatever, that's who I am.
Yeah.
That's what I want to listen to. You're free to listen to whatever you want. You're free to, you know, to go with the crowd and whatever. I mean, I mean, what's sad is, I don't know if you've ever seen this new version of Name That Tune.
I haven't had a chance to watch that, but you've told me about it. Where,
well, it's the most depressing show I've ever seen for me, because I'm like, oh great, a new version of Name That Tune. I had to turn it off, and I'm not joking. I had to turn it off after about 7 minutes.
And that was because?
I knew none of the songs.
Like, never heard of that one.
Never heard of it.
And the sad part is, you know that the people in the audience are like, oh, we know that song.
Oh, like, and they're naming that tune in three notes.
Yeah, and Jim's just like, who?
Yeah, I don't even know the song. I don't even know the band they're talking about.
Jim's just like the guy that goes to high school, comes in on a Monday, and everybody's talking about the prom. And Jim goes, there was a prom?
Yeah, what?
I didn't know about that.
Yeah. I mean, I was so depressed. And then they're like, and then they go, okay, Carol, now we're gonna throw an oldie in at you. It's from 1995. So I still don't know it.
Yeah.
I'm like, could you imagine if they played a Buddy Holly song?
They'd be like, what dinosaur did you fall off when you were listening to that?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's like if that's like playing a Buddy Holly song, which like came out in like 1957, right?
Yeah.
That would be, so that, think about that. That's like 64 years ago.
Right.
So from if we were in the 70s or 80s, that's like somebody playing a Rudy Valley song.
Yeah.
And we're going, well, in my dad loved Rudy Valley. I love anybody.
You know that song? Everybody knows that song.
Yeah, I love anybody who sings into a megaphone.
Getting old, babe. That's what it is.
Yeah. So, like I said, to wrap things up here, it was the Rolling Stone 2020 500 album list of greatest albums of all time was shocking to some extent. Mm-hmm. It was surprising, yet it wasn't. But and now that we're talking, ultimately, I just think it was very humbling.
Yeah.
Because it really did, now that it is not rock centric, and now that it is a coalition of tastes,
yeah,
it really goes to show, just as what you just said, that while we're getting old, while we are passing the torch, while we are sounding just like our parents, even though we thought we never would,
yep,
swore we never would. but it really does go to show you that, once again, I think moving forward, you either have to decide whether, you know, your music is your music, mm-hmm. and you're happy with that. And there's no question that, I can't wait for the 2027 list.
Yeah.
'Cause if you think the Beatles fell on this list,
they'll be lucky to crack the top 200.
Yeah, and I don't have the list in front of me, but I don't even know where Elvis. We were talking about Elvis earlier. I don't even know where he shows up.
Yeah, well, with Elvis too, keep in mind he wasn't so much an album guy.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. Most
of it. I was going to ask you one real quick note. Where did Elton's Goodbye Yellow Brick Road obviously had to land somewhere?
I think it was like 137 or something.
Was,
it
was, like, was that his top place?
Oh, yeah.
I would think.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, like I said, maybe it wasn't even that high. I don't know. But, I mean, I tell you, it's just a, I guess the biggest takeaway is it was quite a wake-up call.
Sure.
And once again, I mean, in terms of Rolling Stones' motives, I think it was a well-executed thing. They certainly brought their list and brought their magazine into 2021.
Right.
Trying to make it relevant and trying to
showing their awareness of the cultural changes, and again relating it again, like you said, a 50-year-old out Marvin Gaye. Like I said, I'm looking forward to this Sunday thing on CNN because I want to see all the ideas and thoughts and how they relate. We already know how they relate, but they're going to get into specifics, so it should be interesting to see what they talk about.
And I have to say that when I got this list initially, it did motivate me to go back and listen to that album, and there's no question it's a great album. I don't know if it's the greatest album of all time, but it's certainly the greatest album of all time in these times.
Or I was just gonna say greatest album of our time, meaning exactly specifically now.
Of this time,
exactly.
So
there you go.
Well, I want to thank Mick Kaler for joining us. Thanks to our new pandemic technology.
Hey, anytime, bud.
Always fun talking to you. Usually I try to keep these podcasts to an hour. I'm looking, and I'm at the 126 mark, and you know what? Jimmy Crack Corn, and I don't care.
And we hope this was for you, and not for you, right?
Right, exactly. Well, Mick, hopefully this can be the beginning of you taking part in the podcast again. It's always fun to talk. It's always fun to hear your opinions and share your expertise and your humor. And I've always enjoyed talking to you this is sad. We have next year, we will have known each other for 40 years.
There you go. I know. My best friend who I've known since I was 12. You know, 48 years, bud. 48 years we've known each other.
Oh, you know? That is.
Well, you know, to put in perspective real quickly, because next week I'm going to put a blog up about it. Next week marks the 50th anniversary when the Chicago Blackhawks broke my heart by losing to the Canadiens 4-game in the NHL Finals.
Oh, 50 Tony.
Years ago.
Oh, Tony O missed that bad shot.
Yeah,
Jacques Lemire,
and then Andre Richard outfaked Magnuson and put in the game winner.
Oh.
And you'll read more about it, but that was 50 years ago, pal.
Wow, Antonio Esposito just turned 78.
Oh my god, still dying that hair, isn't he? Phil let his go gray. Tony's dying it.
All right, well, Mick, thank you again for taking part. We were looking at the top 500 albums of all time, and I guess the best way for me when I looked at this list and looked at all the names and the way the rock and roll music entries had plummeted and other forms of music had risen to the top, my only reaction was, what's going on? And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Don't forget, every Monday a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or go to wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And also, don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, send them a link, send them a message that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and your devotion and that little extra effort is much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 259. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen.